Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Code and the Code Encoders Who Code It. Today, I have the Ruby archaeologist Nick Schwatterer with me. Nick, what is up? For anybody who is unfamiliar with you, please introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. My name is Nick Schwatterer. On all the socials in the world, I go as Schwad, or if Schwad is taken, which sometimes it is, I'm Schwad underscore RB, which you might be able to guess what that stands for. Also, I don't know what I am. Like, if I'm introducing myself, I said this on a podcast a while back. Like, I listen to podcasts for like 9 years now, which is crazy to think. And everyone who comes on has a thing. Oh, yeah, I'm a maintainer of Nokogiri or something, which I actually know that I'm just saying like really cool stuff. And then I was thinking, I'm Nick and that's it. I'm just Nick. For some reason, I snuck my way onto a couple amazing podcasts with really cool people. So it's awesome.
I think most people probably know you as the Ruby archaeologist, just based on the last couple of talks you've given and some of the work you do, especially now, kind of keeping older rubies alive or updating them for the current times we live in. And we'll get to all that. But first, if this is anyone's first time listening or it's been a while, the way this is going to work is I'm going to ask Nick three questions. I'm going to ask him what he's working on, what blockers he has, and if he doesn't have a current blocker, I'm just going to ask him to share a recent blocker he had and how he got around it. And then I'm going to give him an opportunity to share something cool, new, or interesting that he's learned or discovered. And it doesn't have to be coding related. And I will be very interested to see if he can top the last time he was on and we went on a rant about endangered hobbies, because that was awesome. But before I talk myself into oblivion, Nick, what are you working on?
I'm working on a project I'm going to describe with an analogy before I just say what I'm actually doing. It's like the lost city of Atlantis. So imagine that one day an island just kind of came out of the ground. You know, we had access to it and we see this ancient civilization, not ancient aliens. We knew they legitimately had great technology and we just have the manuals for how to use that technology, but we don't really have necessarily the blueprints. But we have enough evidence to like construct how this amazing technology fits together. And we have some old Atlanteans still walking around. So this analogy is falling apart, who like remember one time where we were flying on hovercraft jet skis that could go on land and could shoot lasers through a cloud and bacon would fall from the sky. So we have some like mythology from humans and mythology in human readable text and a few bits of interesting materials, and we're trying to recreate the technology. The grown-up version of that is there was a powerful bit of technology that was very much alive from 2007 to 2010 and has gone on a steady decline of bit rot for 13 years. I'd say it's not usable anymore, and it hasn't been for a while. I used to use it. It's called Shoes. Why the Lucky Stiff? One of his seminal libraries. So if you liked reading The Poignant Guide to Ruby, which I hope of your listeners would know, if they don't, Google it, get it. It's free PDF, great text. Any point in your Ruby career, anyone could read it, but it's also amazing art. Y also wrote a guide for Shoes that was, I thought, just as beautiful. It was called Nobody Knows Shoes, which is amazing because if your code gets forgotten, it's like true, like nobody knows Shoes. So I was a huge fan of this. And oh, you're like, what is Shoes? Well, nobody knows it. So I just expect you to not know it. It was a DSL that Y put together with raw Ruby to make desktop native applications 16 years ago. Also from a Linux machine or a Windows machine or a Mac machine with the same Ruby and package it up. I don't know if you get this as a Rubyist. If you went into Ruby from no coding background and you just wanted to make something, there was always this weird thing of like, how do I get an app to my grandma on her Windows machine? Oh, does she have Ruby? No. And it's just like, how do I give somebody something useful? And we kind of forgot about this because of mobile apps. So everybody thinks that mobile apps. But yeah, so this was a really amazing tool where I could, 16 years ago, write something really useful and cool and powerful and package it into a format for a Windows, Mac, Linux machine and just send them, hey, here's the .dmg file or whatever, and enjoy my code. It's absolutely amazing. So I had all the context around GUIs, desktop GUIs, which by the way, if you've never built one, which I haven't, it's its own domain. We're used to markup with HTML and stuff and thinking in markup. and thinking in OO with our back end, all the industry terms are different. Like it's like draw text. That's what they call it. They call it drawing the text. And then it's like appending attribute of style and procedural and stuff like that. Anyway, that's what shoes is in like 2 seconds. And then what I'm doing in the grown-up way, the analogy is leading a team, I'd say, but also acting as a maintainer on a project to develop what the grown-ups would call a new implementation for shoes. If you don't know what I mean by a new implementation, an example I could give is if you've heard of Truffle Ruby or JRuby, it allows you to take the same text of Ruby code and run it with something else and get the same result, but with their implementation. So Truffle Ruby is a fantastic project. And obviously one of its benefits is it can be incredibly fast. It's often the fastest Ruby out there. So what we're saying is we're not going to take the old shoes repos, which are hard to do because you write everything 3 times. It's hard to maintain. You have to have so much context in very different domains. But we're just trying to take Wise DSL of how to write a desktop app in Ruby and pass it with a different backend, with a different implementation. Because why was ahead of its time? What's happened in the 16 years since then? Hey, technology's kind of advanced. Do y'all remember hearing about Electron and like people writing JavaScript and HTML and it becomes a desktop app? And now all our memory is destroyed whenever we run anything. So we have a proposition that there is a way to do it. But the analogy, the hint is like, there isn't a spec. So if you want to write a Ruby implementation, there's a spec that you pass. You're like, voila, I am a valid Ruby because I passed this thing. Why didn't, that doesn't exist. So we just have to kind of figure it out from the scrolls that are varying levels of authenticity and build it. But why is this cool? Boy, I still think this is something that people deserve. Y knew how to build desktop apps very, very well. His taste for DSL was exceptional. Noko Giri's DSL is based on Y's apricot library. There's still bits of Ruby core that were written by Y, like the original YAML parsing and stuff. How to talk about Ruby. How to like have the values of having something be incredibly approachable to an absolute day one beginner, but still be useful to like Nick, who's, I don't know, a beginner who's been a beginner for 9 years. You know what I mean? There you go, Drew. There's my 45 minute. The podcast can ship. There's my whole what I'm doing with my life. But by the way, spoiler alert, Drew may have been involved with some of this. I haven't talked about the recent work, but overall, this is a project. GitHub.com/Scarpe/Scarpe. I haven't even name dropped it. I haven't even told you the name of my movie that I'm selling, but it's called Scarpe, which is Italian for shoes. The person who I nerd sniped into initializing this, Marco Rudeloso, is from Italy, from Sicily, and came up with the name. It's a great name.
Yes, spoiler alert for everybody. I knew exactly what Nick was working on when I asked him what he was working on, because I was fortunate enough to be part of the hack days where this was sort of went from a crazy idea to a crazy cool project. I hope some of my little contributions are still there. I know it's been worked on quite a bit since I have been busy with a couple of other things, but I'm hoping and excited to get back to it because it is such a cool project, not just building it and building the backend for it, but even using it. Some of the most fun I had during those hack days was like, okay, cool, we've implemented this feature. Now let's write a couple of examples with it. And just writing these little desktop apps was so much fun, seeing Ruby run in like a GUI context. But also Wise DSL, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. He had a wonderful, I don't know, brain thought process, whatever you want to call it, for how DSL should be constructed. It flows so nicely. It makes sense. The learning curve is not steep. It's a DSL, so there is a learning curve. Even just opening any of the project examples that I hadn't been involved in, I could just feel like I knew what I was doing. I knew what was going on, or at least I felt very confident that I could figure it out based on how nice the DSL is. So it's such a cool project. And that was really why I was like, this is a great excuse to have Nick back on the show because it's so cool. I want more people to sort of hear about it as soon as you were ready to kind of open it up. And I'm still, you know, in the Discord and I still watch the GitHub repository. So I see so much cool stuff is happening with it. And I wanted to bring you on to talk especially about the things that I haven't been too involved with. Like, I've seen Noah Gibbs rewrite so much of the testing harness and the back end stuff, and I just haven't gotten into the code and see, ooh, what actually changed here. Speaking of all that chaos, what's been going on for the past, I don't know, what's it been, a month or two since the Shopify hack days?
It feels like a day, but I think it's been months. But what's been going on lately is a good question. And I guess I'll just, 2 points. I want to respond to something you said about it and also give a bit more context on what has happened. It is a complete, not even the same ballpark, but like a paradigm shift to think like this. Think of all the misery we web app people have gone through about this idea of responsiveness. Think about the jQuery we have written in our lives. Think about Ajax. Think about, oh, I just want to click this link and have this button, but I don't want a page refresh. What really shocked me right out of the gate with using something like Shoes and what we're building is it's all native. So what's the problem exactly? Part of the work, as well as building the apps, as well, giving example apps, showing people how you can use. And you'd done a thing called Ruby Racer, which was a Ruby profiler where you could enter in roster in a desktop app. This is a working thing, folks. You better check it out. Where you could write Ruby code in Textbox 1 and Textbox 2 and benchmark it. Based on that, that inspired me to recreate something that Kevin Newton had, which was running the AST on Ruby code live character by character in the browser. And it was dead easy to do in a desktop app. So every time I typed a character on the left-hand side in my Ruby, it gave me a live AST on the right-hand side. How did I do that? Well, I just ran the syntax tree command against the contents of the box. I didn't have to say, oh, you know, post request. Oh, got to do a React component here. Is there a listener? No, I just like Ruby variables, setting things equal to each other, but then modifying it on the way. This is how it ought to be. And then we might have people looking into putting Shoes in the browser.
Oh, no.
With WASM. WASM.
So actually, that's not a bad idea.
So you might be able to be a web developer with Shoes. And then maybe you could use ChatGPT and Copilot to write it all for you and then have 30 engineering jobs and retire. But anyway, you'd asked me a real question and I didn't give you an answer. What's been going on besides ChatGPT and Shoes taking over the world? There's a hack days, and this is interesting because it's an internal thing at Shopify. It used to be every few months. And now it was like half a year. I think they just happen when they happen. But the format's the same. We do really work hard to default to secret externally, which is hilarious because my team works so much on open source stuff. So I just try to be very careful about what I say. But what I will say is we have a hack days. I don't think that's a fireable offense. And I asked folks saying, hey, if you're doing something that's pure open source, can you have open source people get involved in the world? And kind of the way that some teammates had phrased it is like, well, if it's on an open GitHub repository, you can't stop them, can you, from filing PRs and stuff. So I kind of took this to reach out to a few friends, including yourself, Drew, and people internally who are interested. And we just were kind of a team for a week, kind of initializing this thing that had like a hello world was basically where it started. And we went in with going through Nobody Knows Shoes. And then there's a few other manuals. There's about 300 examples we could find of working Shoes apps. Honestly, and Drew, I think you got the vibe too. We set it up so wherever people wanted to go, they could contribute. If you want to try and pass some apps, if you want to write a new app, add it to the examples directory, because that's how we prove it. Or if you wanted to like go deep, some people were just like, now we can make it bold. Or some people would say, hey, I'm going to rewrite our architecture. Because you say Noah Gibbs and Calvin were very involved in a lot of that. But what's been happening recently is I'm very grateful to some of the contributions that have come in because they're not things that I would have, I don't mean that they're not important, but they're not things that I would have had the skill set to be useful straight away on. So we have Noah Gibbs, who's been very involved. We're in the same time zone. And he has a tremendous amount of expertise in, I'll just say, Noah, if you're listening, everything.
Can confirm.
He works with benchmarking YJIT on the YJIT team and many other things. So like when he comes in and says, can I come up with a testing suite? I'm like, yeah, figure it. I assume no tests for this thing. Like it's just going to be like, can you run it on your machine? Can one person? All right, it works. No tests, right? And he's like literally writing multiple, every layer. Like imagine having to like re-come up with, you know, Rails system tests or model tests, mini tests, RSpec. Imagine doing that in a new domain. You have to make up everything and figure it out, but have it be user-friendly. So he's done a lot with that. And we've had a lot of think of the architecture. And I guess I'll say about the backend, or we call the backend a display service because backend's not quite right. So the display service side, the default that we've started with is a tool called, which we haven't actually said yet, WebView. And WebView is great to get people involved because it can take raw HTML and JavaScript and CSS and make a desktop app. So if you have a simple Y DSL and you go def para, so para is what Y used for like paragraph P text. You could just render a string that was a paragraph and it would, and then shove it, interpolate the Ruby stuff and it would render. I'm oversimplifying it massively, but you know, that's where you start. And we've built on from that and built on from that. And right now, our definition of done is to pass all of the examples we have, which we have 256, and then pass Hackity Hack, which was the largest shoes application that has ever been built. So we're maybe about 45 examples in, which is pretty good. Drew, you can attest, you can build a thing like that isn't necessarily pretty or production, but you can do a lot. A lot of these apps are going to be like little edge features, like drawing an oval. No one will ever draw an oval, but we want to be able to draw an oval. So part of the work that's happened recently, specifically to your question, when I said that I want any, and this is still, by the way, the Hack Days is basically still going. We have a Discord, we're active in our GitHub, and we've had a few reformations. So I've completely redone the README. I know that sounds silly, but it's actually quite important. So that our current state of play and what we want to achieve is very clear. I've deleted about 40 issues because I've realized that opening every single issue for every bit of DSL was also silly because it was hard to track. And we've actually created a mega issue called the ultimate good first issue. And it is past example. We're going to call it example-driven development. We have a huge bucket in the repo of 240 examples that aren't passing. Those are your issues. If it already passes, you get the free PR. But if there's one line of it that doesn't quite work, what do you got to do to pass it? Do you have to do like maybe two side PRs or maybe just pass it with one PR? And we've realized that for getting it working and getting it compliant, that's the best way. Because otherwise we're doing our work twice. Oh, we implemented para wrong because Nick wrote a bad issue and now we're seeing how it's actually used. Nope, just examples. So that was a big shift in our vision in the last 2 weeks. Another thing, you know, everything's open for folks to come in for examples or backend or whatever they feel like. We've architected multiple display service architecture. So I said it's WebView. Now it's WebView display service. So if you are like, hey, I like the work these folks are doing, but I'd sure love to try it in Electron, Chromium, whatever, raw Rust, WASM. We actually support that. And I'm working on two or three alternative ones right now for fun to kind of prove out this multi-display service architecture. So we default to WebView, but you can pass in an NVAR variable and use a different one. So that's pretty exciting that we get that going. And so I guess if I were to go on to another big thing, which, yeah, Drew, I know this is another long-winded thing, but there's a lot going on. People are welcome. And the next phase, I guess, is talking about it publicly. So yeah. Brittany and I, every 8 weeks, go on the Ruby and Rails podcast and just say hi. You know, it's been a cool tradition we've done, I think, for a while now, where we can say, hey, Brittany, what's going on? Because the guest never asks. That's why I try to ask you what's going on, too. You know, what's going on? And then I just like, what's new? I'm like, I think I'm going to talk about it. I've had people, there is a Discord, there is a repo. The public can make contributions. So we're talking about it now. I don't think I can say here, but I may or may not be speaking at a conference about it. I've taken a big break off conferences for like, to me, a big break, like 8 months is basically like 55 years. I'm going to come back a different man in a freaking cane and in a gray beard. What's that talk again?
It will be weird to see you do a talk that isn't a Ruby archaeology talk, because I feel like that has been,
yeah,
like my best memories of you giving a talk have all been like, hey, forgotten frameworks, or like, here's code that you probably haven't seen before. And you do also bring that why flair to the talks of like, I am definitely not going to make this a normal talk. And by normal, I mean, here is my slide. I'm going to talk about a thing. Here's my next slide. I'm going to talk about a thing. I love that even if you do get to like, here is the slide that I'm talking about, it's like, I hand wrote the code for you.
Yes, because why did that?
Right. Yeah, it's a very cool, and I love those kinds of talks where it's all good information and it's inspiring and it's all the things that I want out of a talk, but it's also special. There's something about the talk that sticks out in the head.
Hey, coding coders. Are you a seasoned developer who misses regional Ruby conferences or a Ruby enthusiast looking to attend your first? I'd like to invite you to Blue Ridge Ruby, a brand new regional Ruby conference coming to Asheville, North Carolina, June 8th and 9th. This is a two-day single-track conference featuring 10 fantastic speakers plus lightning talks. Asheville is a great mountain town with a solid food and craft beer scene. If you stick around for the weekend, we'll be doing some optional group activities on Saturday, June 10th. Conference tickets are $2.99, and you can find out all the details at blueridgeruby.com. Thanks.
Can I derail you here? I know I'm not supposed to.
Yeah, no, go for it.
You remember my Hobix talk?
Yes.
In Vegas?
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm so sorry, listeners. You are not going to be able to see this because it was in Vegas, and what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But Nick gave one of the most incredible talks I got to see live. You might be able to see maybe close to similar if you see some Y recordings. But oh, man, this Hobix talk was out of control. Amazing. The whole time was just like, what's going to happen next?
So I'll say for the listeners, I knew a few facts before I did this talk. One, it would not be recorded. So as long as I don't break a law, it's free pass. Two, it was towards the end. I was second to last slot. So whoever was at the conference, I'd have a chance to get to know pretty well because there's going to be about 40 people. So like between the bar and everything, I'm like, all right, everyone will be like, what is Nick like? I nearly met everyone, maybe three I didn't meet. And then I had an hour. Like I didn't have an hour. Jason Sweat organized this. I didn't have an hour, but my slot was in an hour. People do like, oh, 30 minutes. Then we get a 30 minute break. Really nice. And I kind of was like, hey, Jason, if I'm like 48 minutes, 45 minutes, is that cool? He's like, oh, yeah. So I think one person went like 57 and they got kind of cut off. So I realized, okay, I have time. I went a bit nuts though. I was reading, you think shoes is crazy. I was reading Wise Hobix code, which was like pre-Ruby gems. He was sharing it by people like evaling raw text in their terminal. I know. Like that's how people were installing it.
Don't do that. For anybody listening, that's a great idea. I mean, you're not wrong, but also you're wrong. It's not a great idea anymore. Don't do that, please. Sorry to interrupt, God.
I'm going to make it so you can only download Scarpe by evaling raw text from a URL I control. So I'd been reading this, though, to get a handle of it for like months. And I was starting to like, I don't use the term manic lightly. I mean, like technical textbook mania. I don't want to go on the mental health side, but I was a bit wild in the headspace reading this code every day that was not meant. So why wrote it for himself? It was code that was not meant to be shared on a repo because you installed Hobix from him. So it was just his own private little thing that he ran on a server somewhere and you'd install a tool that you could write blogs with, by the way, just basically write blogs, command line, commands, executables, all that stuff. Anyway, I get to give this talk and without really going into the content, I decided to do the first half as one character and the second half as another character with a video intermission. So the first half I was Schwad, second half I was Nick. Borrowed a few things from Y. I wore a jacket, replica of something he wore, orange handkerchief, sunglasses. And what was crazy is like, there was such a good vibe in this room, Drew, that I was just doing normal slides and people were pissing themselves laughing. I'd go on a slide and be like, all right, so here's some YAML. They'd be like, wah! They were just like, the vibe was just, couldn't lose it. I'm like, that wasn't a joke. This is real code I want to talk about. And so for the first half, I sold Hobix as like a thing everyone should use, even though like you can't work it. It's not usable nowadays. Maybe, but I've given up on looking at it because I 4 months started to go crazy in a good way. And then, yeah, at the halfway point, I found a video that only had like 40 views that Y had shown at FozCon 2005 that was about 7 minutes of bizarre ramblings and then 4 minutes of like a cool bit of Ruby trivia that people realize as they're sinking into the open ocean with a sousaphone. And I played that as halftime and I watched it. But as it was playing, I changed my outfit. Oh, by the way, I came into the room. I hid in the hallway. I had an audio track play when I come in. I hid in the hallway, changed into my Schwad costume behind a pillar. And I just put my sunglasses on. And I'm like, I'm just going to walk in and give my talk on the hour. No announcement. And even if people aren't ready for it, I'm just going to go for it. And so I walk into the room and I've got the audio going for 3 minutes before I go playing classical music. I just walk up to the desk and everyone's still chatting. I'm like, this is what I want. Whatever happens is part of the performance, Andy Kaufman style. Whether I get booed or they ignore me or they talk over me, this is part of the performance. Let's go. And it was just like an hour of trance. And then it's almost good that I ended on the Nick character, which was like the straight guy, you know, like in classic comedy, just like straight shooter. And then I was like, hey, this is why I made this talk and Hobix is kind of cool. And I kind of came down off the high of that talk. I will never give a talk like that ever again. It was an absolute treat. Holy cow. You let me get away with murder in that talk. Sorry, listeners, to share that story. This isn't me being cocky. This is,
no, let
me
put it's not.
Selfishly, it's the most fun I've ever had giving a talk ever in my entire life.
It's the most fun I've ever had sitting and watching a talk. Trying not to pee, laughing, and just being it's simultaneously like, I'm laughing and I'm also like, what the fuck is going on? This is batshit crazy. And it's honestly, listeners, it's as crazy as Nick made it sound. Like, he really did walk in the room, no announcement. People are still talking and he just starts going. This like intermission, they're seriously, it was like 7 whole minutes of like sousaphone talk. What's going on? And then all of a sudden, it like they loop it all back to like Ruby. And I'm like, what just happened? Did I drop acid or something? This was crazy. And then Nick reappears, no jacket, no sunglasses, and starts talking about Hobix like a real thing. And I'm just like, this is the greatest thing. I know that it wouldn't have happened the same way if it had been recorded, but there is a part of me that is, oh my God, I wish we had recorded that because it was so amazing. Sorry, listeners, you just got real excited over nothing because you're never going to see it. But that should cue you in on if you're ever at a conference and you see Nick is speaking, 100% go check out his talks because they're amazing. He was a huge inspiration for some of the tweaks and changes I made for my game show style talk. And I don't do it nearly as well as he does, but I try and make sure that the audience is enjoying themselves. But if you get a chance to see Nick talk, always go to that talk.
Just even with the laughing, I don't really ever go for that. I go for bizarre, if anything, or different. Like you say about the drawing the slides, that wasn't meant to be funny. I guess in Portland in RailsConf, I did play the Portlandia theme, and that was either meant to be enjoyable or funny, if you know the show Portlandia. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. Sorry, that was not on the topic list, but it's very related because you talk about archaeology, wise code, the past, it's tied in. If and when I do speak about Scarpe and more formally, it'll be interesting what approach to take because like I am a working person. Maybe this is an interesting topic because you give like amazing presentations publicly and you enjoy what I enjoy, but you also are a professional and you have technical interest in things. So you sit around and probably talk about PRs and stuff like that. So it's like when you're going to present to the community, where do you go with this? You have a huge range of opportunity to be like whimsical and funny or honestly give a great talk with no whimsy at all. And no fun at all, but it's still a great talk. So I think it's a really interesting balance to find. And I think it just depends on how you want to do it. I think for me, it would be easier to be just no whimsy because I could just be like, well, the content's solid. So I'll just say, here is a method. Here is this thing that I learned. Next slide. But forced whimsy isn't good either. I don't know. I mean, if anything, you could just give your slides a weird style and then that could be your thing. Or dress weirdly. It's like what I do as well.
I feel like you're building a shoes implementation, right? Like it's a implementation that allows you to write the wise DSL, wise flavor of building desktop applications. You'd almost be doing that whole idea a disservice by not at least allowing it to be a little whimsy and a little anything because you're not doing it because, oh, this is the most brilliant idea ever and we lost sight of it. I think it's a great idea and I really enjoy Y's DSL, but you're doing it because, hey, I really enjoy what Y created here and I really appreciate the level of thought he put into this DSL. So it's like, almost to a degree, it's sort of, not to put any pressure on you, but it's like almost your responsibility to ensure that the whimsy lives on. Yeah, like I almost think the Hobix talk is a great format if you can get away with that time slot of like, be weird about it in the beginning and then transition back to Nick and talk about how it got off the ground, why it's being built this way, like how can you contribute or wherever you're at.
Ooh, this is cool because Shoes has two sides, the user side, which is still a programmer, and the maintainer side, which is the other side, side number two. So yeah, you could have a half where I'm just literally talking about using Shoes and the cool things you can do and the things that I have done and people have done and like showing it and going through it, but like with a bit more whimsy, maybe get my orange handkerchief back out and stuff like that. And like a bit more crazy looking slides, maybe handwritten slides. And then there's still a great conversation to be had about the testing, the display services, fostering a community, which by the way, it's weird. I had a chat with Noah about this other day, what to call myself. I think the word is maintainer. It's like a lot of people are putting a lot of energy into this. I feel like kind of the guardian of, this is what other people have said, the vision. And then who has the settings on GitHub is a good marker of that.
Yeah, there you go.
Who can do the shit on GitHub? But we've tried to be really welcoming. Like we had a first time pull request from someone who I actually know from Twitter, just Twitter. I mean, I met them in a bar, a conference for like 20 minutes once. But when I approved it, instead of just saying, yeah, it looks good. Yeah, I did a whole thing, Drew. I was like, oh, I see you're a first time contributor. Welcome to the circle. In the back of the room, we have what, Chunky Bacon and Yoo-Hoo. I asked for a nice Chateauneuf de Pape red wine, but management says until we can turn a profit on this thing, it's only out of date Yoo-Hoo that we can give you. You know, like stuff like that. Do my Nick thing, which is free. I can do that for free, no energy. But I bet, well, I don't know, another Marco was this first time contributor that did a laugh emoji. So I'm guessing it landed well. But we have the Chunky Bacon channel on our Discord. We have gifts are welcome. I literally just go in the Discord and post essays. And it's either like an essay pertaining to Scarpe, or not myself, like Noah's written stuff, Mark. And like, we'll just be like, I just want to share why I feel this way about this code and just do a thing. And then if you go in the back scroll, there's too much of it anymore. As you know, Drew, like we do have to start doing crazy things as framework engineers to like make the Ruby DSL work. So it is like, hey, oh, can I use the, I'd never heard of the method added hook in Ruby because we know method missing, but method added is like one that triggers when a method is added. So then you can rewrite every method to like track a piece of information about itself in like a global hash and do crazy, terrible things. And so we just start having these complete Ruby geek outs in the Discord. The reason I say this is I think a big part of this work, maybe the most important part of this work, is making accessible to all people and creating an awesome community. Because at the end of the day, who the hell is going to write Shoes code if we have a great framework but no great people? And by the way, I don't know if this is public knowledge. So Marco Rudeloso, who's helping us, who initialized this back in the day, put us forward for Google Summer of Code and the Ruby section. Drew, I didn't know what Google Summer of Code was, but we got added alongside Truffle Ruby and JRuby. And now, I don't know how much of this is public or private. We got a bunch of intern applications in from real people who are interacting with us. Like I genuinely picked our project out of a list of projects because it really interested them. They have vastly different ideas of cool, like a new display service idea with WASM, just really hunkering down on some of the testing or getting WebView forward. So we'll see how it goes or how Google goes about this, but there might be people like breaking into open source and getting reimbursed to spend time on this. So the fact that we have a decent chunk of applications is a sign that our community, not mine, our community is welcoming. I'll say to the listener, if this is not incredibly clear, if you go to scarpe-team/scarpe and you go in the Discord link or file an issue, you're a very welcome person and we would love to have you. Or if you just want to like follow the README and start building desktop apps for yourself as a toy, we're clear about how much we support. Please, this isn't like the Nick and Drew Club where we're just talking about our little thing that you can't have. So it's a community for everyone. If you file a PR that we can't merge, like we'll have a chat, but that's very rare that we don't shut people down or anything. We aren't like that.
I think this project's important also. Like we do have Glimmer The Glimmer DSL has been around for a while and it's pretty well baked, but I think the options to do more with Ruby than just, yeah, it runs on a server and you can make HTTP requests to it and it'll do stuff. And that's super cool. Having the ability to do that. And I mean, like I said, Glimmer is out there. So it's not like you can't do it already, but it's just a different flavor of it, right? And it's a different approach. It's the same reason why Hanami is getting bigger and bigger. It's like, hey, I really love the idea of using Ruby to write my quote unquote backend, but I don't want to use Rails. So cool. Now you also have Hanami in addition to Sinatra. And that's awesome because it just means that more people are going to be able to say, this is the way of thinking that fits well into my brain. So this is what I'm going to use. And it's going to get more people using Ruby. And in this case, it's using Ruby for something that is not unheard of, just not your normal expected path into or what you would normally do with Ruby. And that is build a desktop application. Not like, oh yeah, I wrote a script and if you run it in your terminal, do some stuff. Like it is a desktop application. You double click the icon and it opens up and like buttons can be pressed and shit happens. And it's awesome. And I think it's important for the Ruby ecosystem to do more than just run on servers and no one way. Yeah, if you're going to build a desktop app, you only can use this one way of doing it.
That's right. Ruby runs, as I understand, in satellites in Japan.
And submarines.
Well, there you go. I didn't know that.
Yep. I found that out in Denver at RubyConf in Denver. There was a guy there talking about the Ruby code that runs. I did hear about the satellites, but I also heard about the submarines. And I was like, what? This is awesome.
And don't they use Xbox controllers in submarines as well?
I think so.
For the Periscope?
I have heard something where I didn't know it was Xbox, but I heard something about it being a game controller to control various instruments.
It is good, though, because if you think you have a device that people spend tens of millions of dollars on, making hundreds of millions of dollars off it, and it needs to be the best feeling for somebody to interact with something, it's like, oh, yeah, let's throw it in the submarine. This is going to work. But no, I want Ruby everywhere. That's a very good point. It's great that it runs in web. I write Rails like every day of my life, but my last talk was about maybe half a dozen web frameworks in Ruby that you'd never heard of that are written in Ruby. But that's the first step into my real interest, which is Ruby everything. Like I really need to spend time with like embedded Ruby and hardware and stuff. Like, so maybe I need to level up my Arduino and then see how to Rubify that. And another thing for listeners that Drew brought up that you really want to underline, if you want to do great desktop applications like production ready today, Glimmer is so good. And I should have given it a shout out. If you just Google like Ruby Glimmer, it'll come up. It's been around for like a decade and it got the Fukuoka Award last year, which is the government of Fukuoka in Japan has a Ruby Award ceremony every year because that's how big it is there. Like, I think that's where Mats lives. And they love him and the government administers it. So like, if you want to know if it's a good repo, that's a good sign. And having spent a lot of time in this space, I actually use it quite a bit to test stuff out. So if you go in their examples directory, they have like these crazy good, nice looking desktop apps and you can copy paste the Ruby. It'll just run on your machine. You can tweak it to what you want. So I think it's a good place to start. I have more to say about Glimmer in the blocker section. But yeah, honestly, folks, if you're like, I need to make a desktop app that's like crazy today, I really look up to Glimmer and everything they've done. They're amazing. Any Glimmer folks listening, thank you for all your awesome work.
Well, on the topic of blockers, this is probably going to be another good segment. What do you got?
So have you heard of Glimmer?
Yeah, I believe I've heard it mentioned a few times.
Similar-ish to what we're trying to do at Scarpa International, headquartered in Belfast, is support multiple display services. And Glimmer is really cool about this as well, because they have multiple approaches as well to desktop applications. In fact, a lot of things. In fact, Glimmer does so much, I can't even tell you everything they do. So part of that, I think the default that you would use is something that's called Glimmer-DSL-libui, possibly -Ruby. Maybe not -Ruby. And it gives you a bit more of an OO approach. Maybe it looks a bit more like shoes. So like window, block, text, block, horizontal box, block, vertical box, block, text, area. So that kind of almost markup look, bit of object-oriented stuff going on. I started that because I needed to prove out that we could support more than one display service. So I was like, well, let's do Glimmer then, because it's actually Ruby. This might be easier than Web View because we're not having any of the problems of dealing with HTML or the DOM or JavaScript. Because I'm literally going to be taking one flavor of Ruby and making it another flavor of Ruby. You probably see, hey, maybe there's a way you could use syntax tree or an AST or maybe RuboCop autocorrection. But we ended up using, it's still, I mean, it only passes a few examples. It's still like I'm spiking on it. We started with like just text because it kind of makes sense. So like if I do def para, well, then just do the raw text and eval it for what that looks like in Glimmer DSL libui. And got pretty far with that. And you just interpolate the things in that you need to interpolate. It's just a chain of evals of strings all the way down. It's actually pretty beautiful. If people want to go look at it, you just go to the glibui directory on our page and you can see where we started, at least on para. But I started running into issues really quick because when certain concepts were just structurally very different, it wasn't quite clear how to piece them together. And it was getting a bit hard because what they call a window, what we'd call a window. And it was just like, oh no, this is a bit gnarly. So turtles all the way down. Glimmer DSL libui is on top of another Ruby gem called libui, RB. And that's, of course, built on top of a C library. I don't write C, folks. I use C Ruby, but I don't write C all the time. A C package? Boy, I'm a great maintainer. I'm really well informed here. A C, let's just say library, okay, called libui.
Sure.
Now, here's the risky bit, okay? You see all these stacks. And if you go on the formal readme for libui, it says this is mid-alpha. I'm like, oh boy. This is like the XKCD comic of about the one thing and everyone's sitting on top of it. But it's a very good mid-alpha. This person's version of mid-alpha is my complete, right?
Okay.
So we start there. Okay, well, I can't learn that. However, Glimmer DSL libui is a bit, okay, I can't make that work. And I was like, what about the libui gem? This is where it got interesting, Drew. And this is what I'm spiking right now is a potential, I guess, third display service, which is instead of using the topmost layer, using the middle layer, which is Ruby, but just raw libui in Ruby. There's like very few docs because it's all like, look at the C library to see what the bindings are. So I'm just using loads of examples and just hacking them around. And literally somewhere out there, I have a gist, which is one file, and it's supporting maybe about 9 examples in shoes just with this one file, which is quite exciting. But I'm just doing the ugliest. It's a spike. But my current blocker is seeing, maybe it's not so much a blocker as hard work, but I may never ship this. So I'm just starting with the idea of what's it look like. And I guess the blocker for me is the understanding of two domains at once. The first domain is how people talk about desktop GUIs. Boy, all the terms are different. I know about DOMs. I know about navs. I know about paras and sections or whatever style. But that's a new thing. And the other one is going from OO, which is a bit more Glimmer DSL libui, and just being declarative, procedural, whatever. However, I'm finding it very tasty for like putting OO on top of it. Because if you think about it, it's very much like you set a constant, which is UI, and then you just keep doing things to it. Add horizontal box and then assign it to a var or something. It's like, append this to this box. And it's just like very much like one step at a time. What do you want to do to this thing that you have? And then if I'm write para over it, if I write the shoes DSL over it, I'm finding that it's still hard because I don't know any of the terms or what the hell, like how it works. But when I do find something, it's really exciting. I'm like, okay, cool. I can very clearly say, if you have a parent, go inside the parent box. If you don't, just go inside the thing. Create a string. Okay. Now give the string this text. Cool. Now give the string this attribute of italicized. Cool. All right. We'll just save that to like an IVAR or something if we need it later. And just keep piling it on, right? And now I have something where I can do multiple paras. I can do nearly all the stylings for a para. I can do the alerts. It is a proper system. So instead of what we did in WebView, which was like a modal inside the box, the alert really is a box outside of the box. And when things are easy, they're easy. When they're hard, they're hard. I've said I'm going to spike on this for at least another month, this specific libui thing, because folks, I'm not replacing WebView. I'm just trying to prove the promise of supporting different display services. WebView's doing very well. if you're coming, we would love you on WebView because you can speak in HTML and make it work, right? But yeah, I'm calling it a blocker because I might be on like a multi-month spike on something that may never yield any use. But just understanding this vocabulary, it's not blocking in that I can't absolutely get it done. It's just blocking in that at any point, it could all fall down. Like at right. any point, it's either going to be very easy minute to minute or very... And by the way, when it crashes, Drew, what do you think it crashes like? It doesn't give me a Ruby stack trace of like undefined method foo for bar class. It's just like segful. Here's 800,000 lines. No, you can't pipe it out. No, you can't rescue it and give a better message error. Here's 100,000 seg fault error lines. And then I think about like, is this what core Ruby maintainers have to deal with every day? Just like one line change at a time and then, oh, seg fault, go back. That's literally what my experience is like. That's it. That's what's my big blocker-oony is these days.
That's a fun blocker though.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that is, I don't know.
I'll send you the gist.
Yeah, please do. I'm curious. But I also hesitate to call that a blocker. These spikes that like, even at the end, if you delete it all, to me, a blocker is always like, it's stopping me from accomplishing a goal. But if your goal is to just learn and understand all these ways of displaying a GUI in a native desktop application, then like everything you're doing, you're learning so much. So even if what happens at the end of it is like, yeah, no, I wasn't able to implement this as a display service, the amount of stuff that you learned while going through it, it almost is like, it's not a blocker, it's just a spike of I'm going to go off and learn a different implementation and see if that changes how I would approach other display services in this context.
I've got a one-line blocker for you then, something that I can't do and I don't know how I'm going to do it in one line. To be a proper shoes implementation, we have to be able to package this stuff up properly.
Yeah, there you go.
No idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to ask. I thought about asking, but I was like, I don't want to poo on the party here, but like
if we can never do that's fine, but I feel like that'll be like an end of game work. It's like, now can you print your software on a CD and send it to Best Buy to be sold? That will be done. And they're like, all right, now package it up. But I assume the modern tooling, if it's meant to run on any machine, there's a package, but I'm fully blocked. Or maybe you could say, Nick, you're not blocked, you just haven't worked hard enough to determine you're blocked. Yeah, maybe my laziness is my blocker in that case.
I don't know. That is, I'm very excited to see how that gets solved, because that's another domain where I'm just like, I mean, I know how we deploy web stuff, but I have no idea how you package any of this stuff up as an application. And that is another cool bit of it is like, not only are you writing a desktop application, but the absolute end goal involves being able to say, I wrote this desktop application, friend that owns a computer. Here, you may install it and run it and use it. And I don't care what operating system you have or anything, like you can run my desktop application. That is cool. That is a cool thought. And even if it never is like, I talk about the web being great because, hey, we don't need desktop applications. You can just, everything can be done through the browser. But that wasn't how it always was. We needed desktop applications. And there's a reason why the web kind of took over. But at the same time, like, it would be so cool to be able to say, here is my desktop application. You don't even need to be on the internet for it to work. I mean, unless your desktop application pings API endpoints. But like, conceptually, you could run this without an internet connection.
Can you still dongle a CD drive into a Mac?
Yeah.
So you can dongle like a disk, like a round CD software disk, and it'll read it, right? Like, I think that's doable.
I don't see why not.
It seems like only 1 year ago they weren't the default, but like, it's a lot longer. Yes, Drew, I will send you a program. When I really think we've cracked it, I will burn a program. I will get it, maybe a box. I'll design it like a GameStop 1999 PC game, and I'll send it to you. That'll be the thing.
That's the end game. There is the last question. There's something cool or interesting. I don't feel like you even need to answer it at this point. We've talked about something cool, new, and interesting.
Oh, I do have one.
If you got something, hit me.
No, I forgot about it. And then I wrote a little note in the paper. It's like, ooh, think of something while talking on a podcast in the next hour. Something cool, new, or interesting that I've learned. At least the United Kingdom is very straightforward for a private citizen to rent a train. And That's it, because I've been whiteboarding with Noah Gibbs about having a Ruby hackathon on a train that's going across the UK. And like, if you just have money and an email address, you could just get a train. You could have them put Ruby all over it. You can fill it with beer and champagne. You can have them dress in certain ways and read out announcements. You can just have a train. Drew, money is all you need. Just cash.
Well, and by the way, yeah, obviously.
You might be like, oh yeah, for the millionaires. I'm not a millionaire, but we're in an industry where we're very like hashtag blessed or whatever. And like the range is not beyond a couple of engineers who don't care about their finances for a month or two. It's in the remit. Nothing's in the books. We've messaged multiple train rental companies. We've got the spec sheets on number of carriages, costing, location, departure, Aberdeen to London, and what do you want us to read over the intercom? What would you like us to serve you? What refreshments? Which train do you like the most? By the way, I think the other thing is if you really just have a lot of money, you could just have it. Like you don't have to have an event like we're trying to say, what if we all hacked on a train for 8 hours together and went out? That'd be great. Drew, you could just be, I just fancy a train. I just feel like getting on a train and I'm the guy. And I just have like my Xbox and a bunch of food, like 1800s aristocracy. So yes, may sound boring, but they don't stop you. You just send an email and they respond back with all the information. Like you don't have to own Man United and have a team to transport. You just say, hi, I'm interested in your train. I'm not telling you where I work. I'm not telling you anything about myself. Just break it down how I can get this train, man. And they're just like multiple companies now in my country are like, oh yeah, absolutely. Here's our train. And staff, they drive it. I'm not driving it. I'm not renting a car.
Well, I would hope not.
So it's like having a person who gets up in the morning as a professional and says, you know what my job is today? It's to drive a bunch of Rubius drinking beer across England. Now, that's my purpose.
I want this. I want this so bad now. Wow.
I've got a number in mind, like for how much I'd throw. I said to like Noah, I was like, listen, if we did this, we just invite some people to start, like maybe two carriages. It'd be a private club. That's how we get out of like no conference, no liability, no money, no. It's like, hey, we're friends, which is not wrong. And we're clubbing together our money. And we just say, and I'm willing to take a loss if nobody comes. Here's how much. And then for every person who chips in, my loss just gets smaller. It's not necessarily happening. I have not asked Noah's permission, but we've talked about it openly on Discord. So it's free. Renting a train is a thing. That's something new and interesting I learned. So last time as a hobby, this time was money can do anything.
You've always got a good one. You always have a good one. I love it. Well, Nick, I want to say, like, how can people find you? But like, how can people find all the things at this point?
If you go on any of your socials and type in Schwad, you'll come to me. Whatever your preferred social is, platform. I'm Nick Schroeder. I work at Shopify. A little mom and pop company. I don't know if I've said that.
I think a few people might know Shopify.
Yeah. By the way, this is on my own time. Let me be very clear. Shopify does not pay me to do Scarpe. I am a normal person who does actual work that hopefully is of value to my company. But like, this is my own time and I absolutely love it. And Drew, thank you so much for you, for what you do for the community and for having me on. I really enjoy our conversations and hopefully I can come up with a nice, cool thing someday again and we can do this again.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I always love having you on. So next time you have anything that you want to just ramble on about for an hour, I'm always happy to have you on and to listen and to ask questions that lead down insane rabbit holes. So thanks again for coming on, man, and can't wait to do this again.
All right, take care.